Good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board for the City of Morro Bay. Please let the record show that every member is here, so we do have quorum. We will start this meeting off with a moment of silence. Thank you. And we will now move on to the Pledge of Allegiance. Please rise.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Now we'll have Chair and Advisory Board member announcements or presentations. We will start down at the end there with Gene. Nothing tonight? Alan? Thank you. Len?
Ditto.
All right. Well, I do have a couple of things. We'll just continue to go down the line. First off, on the overhead is an announcement for the Morro Bay Community Foundation's annual fundraiser, Morro Bay Sings. And this year, the event is Morro Bay Sings Country. Hopefully you are watching this before Saturday, November 8th, because that's when this event will be. We've got some great country artists lined up for you. Again, Saturday, November 8th. Doors open at 5 p.m. at the Community Center. $25 is a great deal for all this music, and there'll be some alcohol there at a no-host bar, as well as food that's served by the galley restaurant for a small fee. So please show up for that. That supports the Morro Bay Community Foundation, which, of course, helps children in our community, both Los Osos, Cayucas, and Morro Bay, pay for their fees for their parks and rec programs if they've got difficulty doing that. So it's a great cause. So please show up for that. My second announcement is with regard to our Harbor Department and specifically our Harbor Patrol officers. Last month there were some comments during public comment period that were made about our Harbor Patrol officers. So I just I didn't feel it was appropriate for me to respond at that time, but I wanted to put my two cents in this month. I am proud of our Harbor Patrol officers. I'm on the water a fair amount. We have a very friendly, professional, and courteous staff when it comes to the Harbor Patrol officers that are out there on the water. I'm a member of the Yacht Club. I've been a member for about 4 years now, and we have lots of transients that come in to our bay. And what I hear overwhelmingly, without exception, is that we've got some of the most friendly, efficient, and professional Harbor Patrol officers on the West Coast. So I just wanted to say thank you to our Harbor Patrol officers for the job that they do and for keeping our bay and our waters safe, and that they look out for both the recreational boaters as well as the commercial. So thank you. Next, Bill. No? Dana?
Yeah, I think we all agree with that wholeheartedly.
I do have, speaking of transients, while we were conducting the survey for the haul-out facility, I know Lynn talked to quite a few transients that came to the Yacht Club, and I talked to a few. One thing that they did bring up outside of the haul-out facility was fuel and the access to fuel. And with our pier situation, the way it's situated right now, they were talked about a lot of their friends that they were buddy boating down the coast, because these people come from Pacific Northwest, the majority. And they said, no, we pass up Morro Bay because it's too hard to get fuel. They're used to, you know, they go into Santa Barbara, they go right up to a dock, and it's easy. You can go on either side of the dock and get your fuel. And at the Yacht Club, we have a plank that they can use next to their fenders, but still, I think we're just so used to the recreational boaters are so used to using jerry cans and getting our fuel up the gas station. But I just think that's something that we need to consider and look into as the waterfront is being redeveloped.
We just came back to town a couple of weeks ago, and happy to be back. We just now received these copies of the economic impact report. We've been waiting. Usually they're done in July. this year. We're a little late, so they're almost historic. In the next 2 months, they'll be historic, so I want to get them to you while they're still news. But I have a copy for each of you at the table here. If you'd like me to leave them with Polly. I don't know what took place last month. I wasn't here, but and don't know what was said about our Harvard apartment. But we certainly agree with everything you said, Jeff. We have the most, and we brag about them. I'd hate to give Eric a bigger head than he's already got. But we brag about them up and down the coast wherever we go, and we're very, very, very proud of their professionalism and their attitudes. And it's been that way. I've been here 35 years now, and it's been that way since I arrived here, and it's just continuing, and it's wonderful to see. And so we certainly thank them for keeping up the good work. Thank you, guys and girls.
Thank you, Jeremiah. You missed last month, but I can assure you we did really good work. Anyone else for public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment at this moment. So we will move on to the other items on our agenda. And I want to make a mention here because we started a little bit late, about 55-0 minutes late, because there was a prior special meeting scheduled by the council. So with the board's indulgence and permission, I'd like us to go till about 8 o'clock, and we'll change things around a little bit on the agenda. I'd like to bring Kyle up before our harbor status report, and when we get to new business, we may just want to take the first part of the rules and regs, because that's a pretty major undertaking, and at that point we'll probably... we won't, as long as you all acquiesce, we won't need a motion to suspend item D2, the tsunami report. So we'll, being aware that we're starting an hour late, we'll accommodate for that to be sure that everybody is on the ball throughout this meeting. So we'll now move on to item A, the consent calendar, which is A1, approval of the minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held last month, October 2nd, 2014. You've all had the opportunity to review those minutes. Are there any changes or amendments to the minutes as submitted? Seeing none, I'll look for a motion to approve.
So moved.
Moved by Dana and seconded by Bill. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously. I didn't put my little cheat notes up here. I know you guys well, and I forget your names when I get in front of the microphone. That concludes item A1. I'm blushing now, too. Item B, public hearings, reports, and appearances. We do have B1, Harbor Department status report. With the permission of the board, we'll move straight to item B2, the lifeguard season in report. Does anyone have a problem with rearranging the agenda a little bit that way? Thanks. So, Kyle. We have Kyle here from the lifeguard division of our Harbor Department. So, Kyle, if you would please introduce yourself and then give us your report.
Good evening, Harbor Advisory Board. My name is Kyle Schaefer. I'm the lifeguard supervisor and reserve Harbor Patrol officer. This evening, I can give you a brief recap of our season. This year was a booming year with well above water temperatures and less fog comparatively to other years. With this summer's great weather and increase in tourists, we have an estimated 129,000 beachgoers. This season, we started from weekend-only coverage from Memorial Day to the weekend on May 24th until June 9th, where we went full-time. Weekend coverage started again after Labor Day and went all the way till October 5th, which was Harbor Fest. With this increase in people, I'm ecstatic to report these low numbers of our 106 days of beach coverage. We had 6 rescues, meaning people in imminent peril. We had 4 swimmer assists, meaning people coached into the beach from lifeguards in the water. We had 117 preventative actions, which means that if a lifeguard hadn't intervened and moved their position or educated on them on their activities, their safety possibly would have been left to be compromised if it was they're in that position. We had four people that we relocated with their parents, typically children. We had attaboy when you see him. Following is the staff. Tyler Cooper, head lifeguard, Jackson Newell, Mac Reinhart, Joel Wilkie, Connor Rose, Katie White, Garrett Swanson, Carrie Kennedy, Chandler Richmond, Kyle Swayze, and Anders Johnson. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kyle. Before you step down, are there any questions for Kyle from any of the board members? You're off easy tonight. Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate it. I appreciate your work. That concludes item B2, lifeguard season end report from Kyle. And we'll now move on to item B1, the Harbor Department status report from our Harbor Director, Eric Endersby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good evening once again. And Kyle, you don't have to hang out the rest of the meeting here. I would like to commend Kyle on the job he's done for the last 3 years. I think Kyle came to us as a wee squirt in the junior lifeguard program, and now he's all grown up. See you, Kyle. Good job. So, department status report. Fair amount of activity going on over the last month. We'll just start on down the list. North T-Pier maintenance and repair, all the major structurals done. Two small items remaining, installing a light pole. Actually, one item remaining. There was a transition area at the where the pier meets the pavement that's been graded in to remove a tripping hazard. Now we've just got a light pole on the south leg. Associated Pacific, as you know, is down at the Cayucas Pier and in force now, hopefully putting that pier back together before it has a major problem. But they just need to get back into our light pole, and then we finish up paperwork. Our construction management consultant is putting the rest of the financials together and reporting and making sure we're all good there. And at some point, we'll come back to the City Council and officially close that project and move on to the next project. Our oil recycling yard, that's our yard down in the Front Street parking lot where the sewer lift station is and where Harbor Festival stores their gear. As you know, we've had an oil filter, used oil absorbent pad, engine coolant, batteries, basically all the stuff that boaters generate as part of their operation. Mechanically, we've recycled that stuff for probably a good 15 years now. It had been mainly out in the open. It was in the two little buildings, if you remember there, those little buildings that were there. Those were little restrooms of some sort. I think there were public restrooms down there way back in the day that we kind of inherited when those went out of use probably 25 years ago. So we sort of moved into there and had a fair amount of stuff spread out. Well, now we're under a roof thanks to NEP grant funding, National Estuary Program, and grant funding from Cal Recycle through the San Luis Obispo Integrated Waste Management Authority. So kudos to my staff on that, since we're naming names. Scott Mather, he was the boots on the ground that really spearheaded this and got the conversion of where we ended up putting it was the old lift station had a ferrous chloride tank there, and it had a concrete containment berm around it. We basically took that as a stem wall for our new building and built around it. So now we have total containment if we have any spillage inside, and now we've got a nice roof on it as well. And then Lori Stiltz, my Harbor Business Coordinator, she's pretty much handling all the financials and the granting and all the paperwork there. So that should be ready. We're pretty well moved in now, trying to get rid of all the other stuff on the outside. I think we're going to try and have a ribbon cutting here sometime in the next couple of weeks and re-debut that facility. It's pretty nice. The aquarium request for proposals, as you know, last year council voted to put out the Morro Bay Aquarium out for a request for proposals as that lease was coming up for expiration in 2018. We did that last year with an initial deadline for submission back in April of the one party that we knew potentially proposing, the Central Coast Aquarium folks. They requested in about March an extension of the deadline. They were working in earnest but still needed some more time, so we extended it to October 16th. Unfortunately, we did not get any submission from them. They did send a follow-up letter saying they are still very interested. They are still working on it. They're still exploring their fundraising and all the things they need to do. I think their letter really said the main thing was they just, once they really started getting into it, they realized how much and how involved it is, and a lot more work to be done than they anticipated. So they're still moving forward. So city staff, myself, and the David Buckingham, our new city manager, we're starting to explore options to try and figure out what the next steps are. Recent city council action. All employee groups have now been approved with new two-year contracts, memorandums of understanding for their contracts. They all expire in June of 2016. That's SEIU, which is the General Employees Union, where our Harbor Patrol officers are, fire, police, the managers, and the executive folks. So a lot of hard work by Ed Crines, our interim city manager, over the last year negotiating those, and then I think finished up with David Buckingham. So council over the last, safety and enforcement equipment grant in the amount of $50,000 to purchase two new engines for tried and true old Harbor Patrol vessel 6-8. As you know, our new boat was built largely to replace that 6-8. While limited in its duty due to the damage that it had on its bottom, it's still playing a valuable role in our waterfront and in our bay. And as we move forward, kind of evaluating our fleet to figure out what boats we're keeping and what we're not, those engines that are on it are, I want to say that about, they have 5,000 plus hours on them. Typically, we get about 3,000 hours out of our gasoline engines. So these ones have lasted quite a while, but they're at the end of their legs. So we're putting some new engines in that, and that'll get us a couple more years to get back on our feet and figure out what we're going to do in the long term. Because our other two boats that we have, one was built back in 1994, I think, when I first came on in 93, 94. We had just gotten that. That was at Harold Davis Radden. And then we built, that's boat 6-6, and then boat 6-5 was built in about 1999, 2000. Those boats are getting pretty tired, too, so we're going to be evaluating our fleet and figure out what we're going to do in the future. Recent events, October 4th and 5th was the 33rd Annual Harbor Festival. Had great weather. I think actually Saturday might have been a little too hot. It was a cooker, but we had a pretty good turnout. Our participation in that was our usual touch tank for the kids that we had down the South Tee Pier, down by the Women for Fisheries group. And we also brought out our old lifeguard tower that was built, I think, back in the either late 70s or early 1980s by the men's colony. We have retained, as you recall, our old towers used to be those white platforms with the little house on top that we replaced with some real lifeguard towers, where we ended up keeping one. I managed to fight off my staff because they all want to throw it out. Well, I've still got that one little tower. We put it up at the Morro Bay 50th celebration earlier this year. Bill was up there. We were doing the Friends of the Harbor Department kind of out of that, and we put that at the Harbor Fest for people to go inside and take their picture in it and act like a lifeguard. So it was kind of fun. On October 12th, two children and one adult were washed off of the inside of the North Jetty by probably the first big major winter swell. They suffered, unfortunately, some major injuries. They were on the bay side. As you know, we've got that little beach now on the south side of the rock that's gotten really popular. And we had typical nice weather we've had in the last couple of months, some folks on that inside beach and then going up under the rocks on the backside and little big swells. Really no place to be. Even when you think you're safe on the inside of the harbor, you're really not, because you get tons of whitewater cascading over there. So the old saw about, never turn your back on the ocean is always true. You need to be aware and look around and see what areas of the rocks may be wet and whatnot, and just because the rocks are dry doesn't mean that's a good place to be. So folks just need to be extra wary out there. Winter is on its way. As we know, we've got a pretty big storm that I think was a typhoon working its way up from the South Pacific, and now it's past Japan, and now it's back in the Bering Sea and regaining strength, and I think we're going to have some pretty big swell out of that over the next week or so. October 19th, we had an underwater dive cleanup at the South Tee Pier, and then the slips immediately south of there, our Beach Street slips. Spearheaded mainly by Chuck Rawlinson and Depth Perceptions Diving Services. The Sheriff Dive Team jumped in as well, as long as Cal Poly Marine Services, Tenera Environmental, who does a lot of the eelgrass diving and environmental work for planning and permitting here in the Bay, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, divers, and a lot of private folks that just came out for a good time of pulling stuff off the bottom. We removed a fair amount of stuff, aluminum skiff, laptop computer, fair amount of tires, downrigger weights, pump motors, crockpot fishing gear, tubing, metal tubing, fair amount of stuff. Chuck, we spoke to him the other day, came in the office and said there was less stuff than he anticipated there would be, because they've never dove under those slips, so they were pleasantly surprised there. But we want to give thanks to Chuck and his group for putting that out and getting that event going. We talked earlier in the week about next year, trying to go bay-wide and organize at each lease site and kind of get each master leaseholder to help organize and do the cleanup down at their lease site. We can, through Depth Perceptions and maybe a couple other dive shops, get divers to those events, and we'll obviously take the trash and whatever gets pulled away, but try and get the lease sites to organize themselves and get the whole bay, because we've been picking away at it here and there, and by the time they get to one end, and it's like the San Francisco Bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge. By the time you get to one end, you need to go start back at the end. So we're going to try and get everything all at once next year. Also on October 19th, Wooden Chris Craft motor vessel, the Glowing Star, lost a little bit of its glow, and it sunk in the State Park Marina due to failure of some bilge pumps. I think this boat sank previously in the State Park Marina a year or two ago. She was raised by the owner using a private contractor. Unfortunately, the boat had no tanks, so it had no fuel on board. I think they're using the little small outboard tanks for the two gasoline engines on board. We put containment boom around while the salvager raised it. No real pollution incident. But now the owner's kind of stuck with the boat, and he's hopefully going to be turning it over for vessel demolition on one of our grant programs, the VTIP grant program. Walking up through the rocks to walk back. A couple of fellows probably covered 10 times the distance through the water as the true Olympic competitors, because they were going nowhere. But they didn't make much distance over the ground. So we've been working with those event folks over the last few days, kind of trying to identify a better day next year, because they're planning on doing it again in the fall. So as you know, the winter tides, we start getting higher and lower swings, so it gets a little trickier to schedule that. So I think we're looking at early October for that next year. But it was a good event. Even the folks, I think they're the folks that even, it wasn't a competitive event. They didn't bill it as a competitive event, but they did track times on everybody. And the folks that ended up either getting a ride back with us in the Harbor Patrol boat or ended up walking back, they still jumped on their bikes and did the run, or did the bike ride and did the run. So I think almost everybody, from what they said, ended up completing it. Nobody backed completely out, which was good. I mean, that was the whole idea anyhow. It was a fun run and a fun event. Upcoming events, November 1 through 28 in Morro Bay. Morro Bay and Bloom is presenting the first annual Morro Bay Surfboard Art Festival. It's a month-long event that supports Project Surf Camp. There's 20 renowned artists and other community groups that have their surfboard art creations publicly displayed throughout the city in various places. You can go online and find that event and find out where those locations are. Gene, have you anybody gone and looked at any of those yet? No? Okay. I haven't, but I'm going to get out at some point and go look at those. So they're having an auction at the Inn at Morro Bay November 29th. Starting from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. To auction off. I don't know if they're auctioning off the surfboards or they're auctioning off other stuff, but look for that, and that would be a fun thing to attend as well. December 3rd through 8th, the Lady Washington and Hawaiian Chieftain. I think probably the ladies confirmed, and maybe the Hawaiian Chieftain, not quite yet, but we're trying to get both boats here. December 3rd through 8th at Marina Square, 699 Embarcadero, for the usual dockside tours and weekend sailing excursions. Hopefully including a little cannon fire, which was pretty exciting. What's that? Yeah, well, December 6th is the Lighter Boat Parade, which is the next thing on the list, and they're right in the middle of that. I don't think we've ever had a tall ship participate physically going through it. Maybe decorate and be at the dock, but actually underway? That could be a little sketchy.
You might be right. I do remember seeing them decorated years ago during the parade.
Yeah, for them to get underway would be pretty interesting. So Lighter Boat Parade, December 6th, taking place on the bay, weather permitting. Hopefully we've got good weather, knock on wood, but we'll see. Training for our department. During the week of October 20th, Harbor Patrolman Dana Stein and Jeremiah Jacobs went to Wisconsin to attend factory service training for our new vessel outdrives from Conrad Industries. They're the makers of the outdrive. Those outdrives are pretty robust, pretty die-hard machinery, real simple, but still machinery that needs some care and maintenance. And so we're doing general preventive maintenance on those and went out for some factory training to make sure that we're doing that right. Those outdrive units are not very common. There's a couple boats in the bay that have them. But the military, I guess, for all their boats that have outdrives, that's a lot of times those are the ones they spec out. So they got some good training out there, and as well as made some good contacts with the factory folks. So if they do have little problems, that we can call the factory folks and we won't be unknown when we get there, and hopefully that will increase our service as well. And then October 29th, we participated in some helicopter training. If you saw a helicopter hovering around outside the harbor on the 29th, was Coast Guard. They came down to drill with their Coast Guard folks, which they do a couple times a year, and invited us along as well. So we jumped in on that and participated in that. Always a fun event, but really in real life, you need to know what the protocols are when you've got a multi-million-dollar piece of machinery whirring around over your head. Everybody needs to know what their roles are and what they should be doing. So that was good training. And then at the end of the staff report, a couple photos, one of our new oil yard nearing completion, and then one of our training. That's our own Becca Kelly there. So any questions?
Questions or comments for Eric? Yes, Bill.
Eric, I read in an article, I wanted to confirm that we have had increased revenue of approximately $385,000. Could you comment on that?
We being the harbor department?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. So every year when we do our budget in the springtime, we estimate our revenues, and we have our base rents, our minimum rents, which are pretty easy because they're CPI adjusters, and those we can pretty well estimate very accurately. The percentage rents, the percent gross of sales, the above the minimum rent rents, it's an estimation. It's about 4%, 3 or 4% above what our actual was for the 12-13 budget year. The 12-13 budget year was 22% higher than what we had estimated. So we took the real number from 12-13, added 3 or 4% on to come to that 190, and then in reality it was exceeded that by a very pleasant amount. So the extra money goes straight into accumulation fund for all of our capital projects. So good turnaround in the last 2 years. I think, between that, mainly because of that, and expenses staying down, our employee costs are down with our in our third tier of retirement formulas now, and a fair amount of new hires in our department and citywide as well. Those costs are down. Between that and the revenues getting back up to better levels, this year's budget, although this year we did receive our final Dynegy outfall lease payment, we didn't need any of it to balance our budget, which was the biggest news. So we're past Dynegy. We don't need that $250. We're whole there. What's going to look really good in the future is when we retire our South T-Pier loan. I think we've got another 8 years on that, and that's $134,000 a year. So that'll be looking pretty good in another 5 to 8 years.
I know a couple of those leases went from a 3% of gross sales threshold up to 5%, so that may account for some of that as well. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Dana?
Yes, Eric, we got an email from you. It was concerning partly our survey conversation, but also there was some information about a climate-ready grant application, and then we responded, and I was just wondering if that went back to the city and if there was any action on that.
No, we're still looking at those to see. Well, as far as, you're talking about Boatyard?
No.
From the Boatyard standpoint?
This Coastal Conservancy, California State Coastal Conservancy grant application for the climate ready grant announcement is what this was.
Is the question, have we pursued that?
Yes.
We're looking at it, I think, as a city. I can't speak for what we've done administratively in City Hall, whether the city is as a whole is looking at that. I know I've been looking at it to see if it's something that would apply to some of the things we're doing besides the city as a whole. We're obviously got the waterfront, and a lot of that climate-ready stuff pertains directly to us. I would imagine if we participate as a department, it would be as part of the city as a whole.
You only have 10 days.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because we were asked to weigh in on it, and so we did, and that's why I was wondering where we were, if there was any action.
Not to my knowledge.
I have one other question, and that's just regarding
the Coast Guard building, what the status might be on that, or where that's at these days.
Yeah, I'm taking some quick notes. Coast Guard building, Coast Guard still intending to move forward. As you know, they got consent of landowner, which basically says go ahead and start the planning and permitting process. They've been trying to get together with us, and we finally do have a date set for November 20th for the Coast Guard real property and legal and environmental folks to come here and meet with the subcommittee that we put together, the city council and administrative staff. Now that we've got new city manager in place. New city attorney. We've got the stability there, so we've got those folks back. So we're meeting November 20th. I believe they're intending to bring some sort of a document like an MOU where they want to. They're looking for a little more commitment from the city that we're on board with what they want to do. So we'll see what they bring on the 20th, but it's still moving forward.
Okay, thank you. Just like to stay on top of that in your reports. If whenever you get any information, you can let us know. That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Dana. Ron?
I know you answered Dana's question, Eric, but the application deadline for concept proposal application for the Coastal Conservancy Climate Ready grants is November 17th, and it strikes us, I think collectively, that a couple of three of the bullets which outline what they would accept and what they wouldn't accept conceptually or the target areas would seem to provide some opportunities in terms of the harbor.
Thank you, Ron. Any other questions, comments? I've got two items for you, Eric. One, as a follow-up, several months ago, we passed a recommendation here on to the council, and the council moved on.
A lot of times we work with parks as well, sometimes state parks, because they'll go all the way down the sand spit, and I think they arrange for a pickup, some of them at the far end, and some of them get a transport back. But usually if they fill big bags of trash, it's hard for them to drag those back out to the bayside and to the boat. They usually do collect a bag or two on the inside, I think, that we'll collect. But most of it's left over on the beach, and then parks some years picks that up if they've got folks available, or we'll drive out there and pick it up.
Great. So if anyone viewing this would like to participate in that, Sand Spit Cleanup Day, being spearheaded by Morro Bay Beautiful, is on Saturday, November 15th at 0800 hours, 8 a.m., and you can meet at the Harbor Patrol office. If you have any questions on that, please call Ron Reisner, who's given out his phone number quite a bit tonight. I think maybe he needs some calls. His number is area code 206-399-0690. So 206-399-0690. If you can't sleep, you've got somebody to call to talk to. We got to have a little fun. We got delayed because of the council. We have to have some fun. All right. Any other questions, comments for our harbor director's report?
Yeah, what was that number again?
All right. That concludes then item B1, the Harbor Department status report. And that also finishes off item B on the agenda, public hearings, reports, and appearances. Takes us up to unfinished business, which are our two standing reports from our ad hoc committees. The first one, item C1, the update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee. Ron is our chairman of that committee. Ron, anything to report?
I'm going to defer to the harbor director, who is the city's liaison with the consultant, to talk about the latest. Eric, please.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. So a few months ago, Lisa Wise Consulting, LWC, completed their case studies. They sent us a draft. We distributed the draft to the Fishermen's Organization and to the committee for comments. The comments are received, sent back to LWC, incorporated in, and they've completed the case studies component. Subsequently to that, or concurrent with that, they finished their survey instrument, also received input from the Fishermen's Organization and the committee for, you know, logistical question type stuff, changing questions, suggested questions. That survey went out. They received 100 and some odd surveys back, which is pretty darn good. They're very happy with the results. They're still trickling in. The deadline was back in October, but it's still on SurveyMonkey, and I think you can still go on our city website and find it, so people are still filling it out, and there's a few trickling in here and there, and they'll will incorporate those as the best they can. But they are putting together their recommendations and findings out of the survey, stitching that all together with the case studies, and working on, like I said, wrapping up the document as a whole, from my understanding. Hopefully we'll get that to us over the next week or two, at which point we'll distribute that back out to the committee for comments, and to the Fishermen's Organization, and then get everything stitched together and finalized, and hopefully they'll have some results this month.
Questions, comments? Yes.
So wouldn't that lend itself that would be an important presentation for us at our next meeting?
If it's in time for December, yeah. Yeah, we don't have the January meeting. Typically cancel that. Kind of depends on timing. I mean, it sounds like it's imminent over the next week or two, and we're here in the beginning of November, so as soon as I get it, I'm going to get it out to the committee and to the Fishermen's Organization for comments, and then we could certainly, I don't see why we couldn't bring a draft back as part of our report here and discuss it as well, and get General Harbor Advisory Board and other, it would be a good forum for public comment as well.
Thank you. And as a reminder, Ron, who are the members of the ad hoc committee?
Dana and Alan and Jeremiah and the mayor, Eric and the nice, and Andrea, I can never remember her name.
Adrian.
Adrian, thank you. Adrian Harrison.
Okay, so a representative from the National Estuary Program, two from Commercial Fishermen's Organization, one of those overlaps with a board member, three board members, and then the mayor, and the mayor, which is the council member, and then
correct.
Our Harbor Department.
Correct. So,
it's a good representation.
How many, prior to the next scheduled Harbor Advisory Board meeting, how many days before that is the agenda set, give or take?
We use a week before.
Yeah, a week before. I mean, legally, it's 72-hour noticing. We like to get it done the Wednesday prior of the week prior. And
with regard to item C2? No. That concludes item C2. So we'll now move on to item D1, which is a review of the Harbor Department rules and regulations. I'll throw out an option to the board here. So we have two items under new business, the tsunami event protocols and then the review of the Harbor Department rules and regs. We do expect the review of the rules and regs to take some time. We're simply not going to complete that tonight because we got a late start. So it's 20 minutes until 8 p.m. right now. We could do the tsunami report and then maybe start on the rules and regs, or we could simply table, postpone the tsunami report and start right now on the rules and regs. So who would like to start on the rules and regs tonight? Ron Wood, would you, Dana? No? He's either way? Either way? All right. We're about even on it. So the chair gets to stick with the agenda here. Here's what I'd like to do is continue with item D1, which is our review of the Harbor Department rules and regs. Go into that, and then we're simply not going to have time for D2, and I don't think we'll need a motion to table that until next month. As long as everybody agrees, we don't need the motion. So let's move on to item D1, the review of the Harbor Department rules and regulations document, and the input that we're going to give the department on that. So we'll go to Eric, our Harbor Director, for the staff report on this, and then we'll carry on.
Thank you. And I will comment, you know, the D2, the tsunami information, that was really an informational for the public and the advisory board. So, you know, it's a good thing for folks to look at if they want to see. We'll bring it back, obviously, for some discussion, but it's more of an informational thing than anything. So rules and regulations, as you know, we've looked at a couple times at the liveaboard ordinance over the last 6 to 8 months. And there's been other interest in several other aspects of the Harbor Department rules and regulations from the Harbor Advisory Board and from the public, and some things to change. I've been looking at it for the last 5 or 6 years and seeing some changes that needed to be done. It's basically our operative document that spells out how our facilities are to be used and our general bay water usage. The municipal code makes reference to it. It basically says this is a council-approved document, and it says the Morro Bay City Council shall by resolution set Harbor Department rules and regulations. So this document is a living document. It changes throughout the years. We added the off-the-boat fish sale thing here a little bit ago. We've been taking little pieces and parts of it, so now we're going to take some more chunks of it, some more parts of it. The way I would anticipate, or the way I would see to make this the most productive, I think, is rather than try to wordsmith individual paragraphs or sentences with what we think they should be, I think just identifying areas that need attention, whether it's, you know, add, subtract, delete, modify, and I've got some notes, a fair amount of notes myself on some things. I'm sure you folks have some ideas here as well. And just kind of go through paragraph by paragraph as far as we can get today. I think I said in the staff report we may not even get done, and that was before we knew we weren't even starting late. So we'll get to a point here at some point tonight and get to this document. It's pretty all over the place in terms of organization. I'm sure there was a method to a madness when it was put together, but I certainly, one of my things that I would like to see is it better organized and spelled out a little more logically instead of having to jump around to find things. But I think we'll just go through. So my intent here, with your indulgence, would be to hit a paragraph, not read it out loud, but try and get the highlight of the paragraph. We'll have a look at it, see if we think that's adequate. If it looks great, yeah, fine, no change there, move on. If not, we'll make note of it, and then at a future meeting, we'll keep getting through the rest of the document, and then at some point we'll bring back some draft language to the document as a whole. And then at that point, I think we can work on the wordsmithing part and getting deeper into the weeds, because I think we'll just, if we try to get into the weeds now, we're going to stay in the weeds. So I'm going to try and stay out of the weeds. So with that, I trust everybody has the document in front of you. It should be in your staff report. And again, basically, it's our general rules and regulations, most specifically to our piers, our 50 slips, our public facilities, beach, sand spit, other public areas, public property areas within the bay, is what this pertains to. Some things apply to a vessel, for example, say at Marina Square, but a lot of it does not, because it's to our facilities and we don't operate Marina Square slips directly. And then there's a fair amount in the Morro Bay Municipal Code as well that speaks to this, and this speaks to municipal code. So there's a fair amount of tying together. So I would anticipate as we move through this, there'll be some things in the municipal code that would need to be. Recently brought the commercial fishing slip qualification issue in front of you a couple of meetings ago, might have been last meeting, for changes to that. And that qualification standard lives in our municipal code. You recommended some changes instead of the $1,000 per net ton, simplifying things. We brought that to the City Council. We are bringing that to the City Council in November, the meeting next week. And that takes a first reading. Any municipal code change takes a first reading of the City Council, so it puts it out there, public input, provided it stays the same. It goes on to a subsequent City Council meeting for a second reading and adoption. So a little more cumbersome, a little more involved process. And again, the rules. The municipal code basically says the City Council shall set the rules and regulations for the use of Morro Bay Harbor by resolution without having to have the municipal code, because rules and regulations are more of a living document. They can change more often based on conditions. Various things can cause changes to rules and regulations. So I think the council back in the early days when this was all put together, rightly so, made the rules and regulations a more living document that can be changed without having to go through the cumbersome municipal code process.
Okay, thank you. And I think something important to note with that as well is that the rules and regs aren't and can't be arbitrarily changed by the Harbor Department or the Harbor Director. This is direction that comes from the council to the Harbor.
Correct. It is a council-approved document.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. I saw Ron.
Eric, I have a question. I'm looking at the staff report, and in the second paragraph of the discussion section, it says, in addition, well, I'll read the whole thing quickly. Once the board's recommendations on the various rules and regulation sections are completed, staff will bring a revised draft document to the City Council for review, input, and approval. The next sentence reads, in addition, currently, Harbor Department staff are in the process of reviewing and updating all department legal, rental, leasing, and other documentation relating to facility and harbor use. Just so to be clear, does that mean that the Harbor Department staff is simultaneously doing what you're asking the board to do?
No, and that's a good point. I'm glad you bring that up because I didn't. We have a set of legal documents for use of our facilities when somebody comes and ties up transient, someone uses the anchorage, or if they're one of our slip holders. They have been overdue for revision for too many years. In this legal day and age, they really are inadequate for what they need to do. You know, the indemnity clauses and the hold harmless clauses and all the things, you know, that tie into the rules and regulations, often refer to the rules and regulations, and I actually brought it along with me. It's basically our use agreement for use of our facilities. You know, if you're going to use our pier, this is what you need to agree to, in addition to the rules and regulations. So in that document is a referral to the rules and regs that says you will comply with all our rules and regulations. There's an indemnity clause in there, you know, releases of liability, liens, you know, something that's not in the rules and regulations. If you don't pay your bills, we have a lien on your vessel, and we will act on it if we need to, and that's to make sure you pay your bills. That's not mentioned in our rules and regulations. So vessel registration documentation, obviously that is referred to in rules and regs, but it's also referred to here. Use of the slip, you know, who's allowed to use it, how it's used, you know, hours of operation types of things, access and subleasing and, you know, what we're allowed, what we will do in an emergency and what we will not do in an emergency. Hazardous materials, you agree not to have any hazardous materials, excessive storage type things, utilities, parking, basically putting the user on notice that here's all of our stuff that you need to comply with if you're going to use our slip, including all the rules and regulations. So it's a similar document to the rules and regs. It's not the exact same document. I've been working on it for a couple of years to get it, along with several other of our legal documents, updated and modernized, because again, it's just it's an old document and it's in need of revision. So I see these two dovetailing together. I don't anticipate bringing the lease agreement type stuff to the Harbor Advisory Board because it's not going to say anything different than what our rules and regs or Muni Code would change. It's more of a legal, you know, covering ourselves type document rather than a rules and regulations document.
Good, thanks.
Did that answer your question?
Yes, I appreciate the distinction.
No, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
And Mr. Chairman, Board, with the Harbor Director's agreement, I might suggest a slightly different approach to the review of the current rules and regs, and that is that perhaps the Harbor Department could provide each of the board members with a copy of the current rules and regs. And
red line, obviously, if three people say the same thing, you don't need to do it three times over. Kind of do a red line of it as we go. I don't have any objections to either way. Either way is fine with me. It's a different, certainly a different way of doing it. I don't see one being better over the other. Although maybe this is an easier way to do it.
Well, the collated document then would be presented to all of us simultaneously at the same time, and then might be the time to have a discussion about the review, about all of our collective review results.
So we've got two different alternatives before us right now, and we'll discuss those a little bit more and decide which way we're going to go. Bill?
You know, I like that comment, Ron, but in essence, too, maybe we as members and board members can discuss some general amendments that actually could be put in or at least discuss whether or not we even want that in as we go along. But I think that is a good approach as opposed to going line item by line item. I don't really want to do that in public discussion.
So, Gene.
Are you suggesting, Ron, that we word process or do something with every document and we give it back to staff? We give it back to staff who then does a synopsis of what our comments are and then comes back to us?
Yes.
Then we make a public document of it?
Yes, with the possible exception that if the Harvard director says that, you know, staff just can't get there, you know, on the basis of available time, then one or more of the board members would do that. I would participate, for instance, if that's a burden on staff. But yes, what you just described, yes.
I would prefer that we rewrite our own documents or look at the documents, make our comments, and bring them back to the board and then discuss them in public at that point,
yes,
as opposed to sending them off to staff or an individual who would make a synopsis of what I wrote.
Right. So we're trying to achieve obviously the same thing, and we have two different approaches here. I actually prefer the track that we're on currently, primarily, and this is, I was going to bring that up, Gene, primarily because there's more sunlight with it. I think if we go through a page at a time, or even a paragraph at a time, some of the paragraphs are going to be no suggested changes. So instead of us doing that on our own, and then to me it's sort of duplicating some of the work or creating an additional load of work for someone to collate that, I think at this point we indicate those areas that are in need of some type of revision or amplification or change, and then the Harbor Department can take care of that and bring us back some suggested language, and then at that time we flesh it out. And I do like that process because it's completely public and allows obviously the opportunity for as much input as possible.
Okay.
So is everybody okay with continuing on the current track?
Is the entire board prepared to do that? I mean, for instance, I'm asking myself, have I reviewed carefully the existing rules and regulations with that process in mind so that I can make the best possible contribution that I can to that. I have reviewed them. I do have notes, but I'm a slow thinker, so I might have more later. You know, so yeah. Then what?
Yeah, and I don't. And we're not on a specific deadline. I don't think we want to sacrifice quality for expediency in this case. And I think we can also go back. You know, if we go to the end and. And I'll certainly, as chair, give everybody the opportunity to, well, if there was something on page one that after going through all these changes that we suggested, I think we should change something at the beginning, I think we can do that. I would like to wait until the end to do that so that we do move through the entire process. My objective, and I don't think it was Eric's as well, was to shackle the process whatsoever. Did you have a comment, Eric?
Yeah, I'm thinking, I wonder if there's maybe a hybrid to that, the two processes where, I mean, you got 3 minutes left if we're going till 8 or somewhere reasonably thereof. We're not going to get super far tonight. I've definitely got no set deadline or time when I need to get all this stuff implemented. I've certainly got enough things to get to the city council over the next few months. To keep me busy as opposed to the rules and regulations. So you know, I see this as sort of an ongoing process to get to the bottom of it, this just being start number one. I do.
Gene?
Eric, can you give us a reading here verbally? We'll give a thumbs up and thumbs down, and then email us that list?
Yeah, absolutely. And then you could weigh in on those items, and that way, on those items, if we're talking about a little more sunlight, we can get those onto the agenda next time, as you know, and these things will be considered. That way, when the commercial fishermen see something, oh, that might affect us, now they know it's going to be on there, or these things right now. It's just a list of things that kind of some things that I believe need to be addressed. That would allow a little better public input on those as well.
So if everyone's amenable, that sounds like a reasonable approach to me. Eric has the things on his list, and then what we could also look at from the board members tonight are areas of omission, things that aren't on here currently that we think should be added or at least looked at. And Eric can look at that as well. And then next meeting, we'll expound on those and then start going through the actual document. And we all know what's being asked of us, and we'll all have some additional time to go through the document more thoroughly. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll start off then with your list, and then board members, please keep in mind anything in here that anything in the rules and regs that's not currently in there that you feel should be addressed, or something in there that just should be taken out. I think we'll want to focus on those items tonight. Eric.
Okay, so again, I'm going to try and focus primarily on things that aren't really addressed in here, because some of my notes. So I went through with my staff over the last couple of days, and we've kind of gone through, and I've been mulling these things around in my head as well while I made the staff report last week. So I'll go over, like I said, a couple of them might slightly be mentioned in here, but I think for the most part these are things that we see could possibly be addressed. So I guess with the concurrence of the board on a given item, then that'll get added to the list. I'll get that out, like Gene says, by email. And then we can redline out the original document, which I can send to everybody, and then come back next time. And these are in no particular order. I'm not advocating one way or another, per se. These are just things that I've identified as potentials. One of them, and it's a biggie, we've talked about a little bit before when we were talking about the slip qualification stuff, insurance. Should be... be thinking about requiring insurance of our facility users. And if so, that would be a rules and regulations or in the use type documents or both.
I'm not clear on the insurance.
Insurance requirements.
For vessels? Or
yes.
Okay.
For slips or moorings? Or?
Slips. Again, our rules and regulations apply chiefly to our piers, our 50 slips, the six moorings we rent, and our public facilities. So again, I'll use Marina Square as an example. You know, they've got 25 slips there. If the city were to enact an ordinance that says, or a rule that says vessels using city facilities must be red, that wouldn't necessarily apply directly to the Marina Square boats because they're renting from, although it's our property, Marina Square's managing when Marina Square might like blue.
It's a big one.
So you're bringing up then the possibility of requiring insurance on vessels that are
correct.
City
and again,
city
it's again, and I think in a clarification for the board and the public, because we give something a thumbs up or a thumbs down to discuss later doesn't necessarily mean that we agree with it.
Right.
Yes, we want to do
right.
that. I want to make that distinction because especially insurance, I mean, that's a big one. And if it could certainly be inferred that, oh, yeah, we absolutely want insurance. We're all thumbs up. That may not be the case. Discussion, I'm doing on discussion. I think
yeah.
I'm bringing these up for both purposes, for discussion and for possible inclusion.
Right. Okay. Ron?
Eric, when you say insurance, in a macro sense, as it relates to vessels, we've got hull coverage and liability coverage. Are you talking about one or both, please?
It's part of the discussion.
To be determined.
Okay.
More macro than that. I think that would be the discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a trend up and down the coast for harbor districts to require insurance to indemnify and to pay for things that happen in the harbor, like a boat sinking or pollution or things like that. And so when you get that insurance, it's a liability coverage, and it has the port listed as a, you know, they're listed on it as they're covered. You know, your insurance covers the port for anything that might happen with your boat.
They have a qualification scheme that requires fish tickets, so they are truly commercial fishing. But commercial nature, and I think it goes on to say something about abalone dive boats and a couple other things. But the rules say primarily for those of a commercial nature. As you know, at our piers, they're not always commercial boats at our piers. One of the things we've considered or looked at is this a possibility? you know, we've never flat out turned down recreational boats on piers because they've got a place and they certainly can accommodate them at times, but do we want to limit recreational vessels on our piers in any way?
Yeah.
As a discussion item.
Yeah, I think it definitely needs to be on there. Yep.
Also, I recently had a request from a fisherman who would like to see a commercial rate of some sort applied at the T-Pier for qualifying commercial boats, as opposed to the same rate for commercial and private. Yeah.
And what my genesis on this is, the reason I've got on my list is our pier tends to be a...
Is your mic on, Eric?
Yeah, sorry, I'm not speaking it. The pier sometimes tends to be a project point for recreational boats, and we've, you know, and especially on our North T Pier, I mean, our repair project over the last 4 or 5 months really thinned that crowd down, but it was to the point for a while there where we had so many recreational boats that we were getting complaints from commercial fishermen that I have got no place to tie up, and it's supposed to be primarily for commercial fishermen, so that's where that comes from. Okay, so I have a yes on that?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Our impoundment ordinance, it's in the impoundment, lives in the municipal code, and chiefly we can impound when somebody owes us money and is not paying. That impoundment eventually can lead to a lien sale if we follow through on a California lien on a California registered boat, or if we follow through on a documented lien on a Coast Guard registered boat, Coast Guard documented boat. But currently, with a few very minor exceptions, the only thing we can impound a boat for is if they owe us money. And our staff has identified the potential need for being able to impound boats for other reasons other than owing money, such as threat to safety and security, abuse of the rules and regulations, chronic abuse of different sorts of things, for folks that, again, not just owing money, but it's more of the threat to safety and security type issues, or chronic past due. We've had people come back, you know, that left us, you know, owing money or were a accounting problem for us in the past, recurring problem over and over and over again, and sometimes those folks leave, and then they come back. And when they show up, as you know, and they show up in our piers, and typically where they end up, we can't just pull them over to a storage yard somewhere or shove them off and throw off their lines. We're just kind of stuck with them. So impoundment becomes a tool to basically, you know, to be brutally honest, to get their attention and get them back in line and try and get compliance with their rules and regulations.
Ron?
I know you know this, but some folks that are listening might not. The current rules and regs also say that under Municipal Code Section 15.56, that you can impound for if a vessel does not appropriately respond to your safety concerns.
Which page are you looking at, the rules and regulations?
Paragraph 5, at the end of paragraph 5.
I think that's the one area where we do have a little bit of latitude, but that's the only. Another one would be, you know, we've got a 30-day limit in our anchorage area in any six-month period. That would be another area where an impoundment would be a tool to people continue to overstay that anchorage. Or if we do something on the pier, some kind of a limit on the piers, if they don't give the program, you can't just keep leaving it there, because that doesn't solve the problem. Impoundment oftentimes does.
So, Eric, does that discussion also kind of feather into what would be defined as an abandoned vessel? Because in reading through this, unless I'm a little punchy, there isn't really anything that we have right now that we discuss impounds and we discuss vessels that are behind in fees, but do we have a clear-cut picture of what we could describe as an abandoned vessel that would then allow certain actions to be taken on by the department?
No, we don't, and that feeds into one of my other notes. It currently lives in the municipal code, the definitions. We are woefully inadequate on our definitions. There's maybe 10 or 12, and there really needs to be a lot more. And that could be one of them. You know, what an abandoned vessel. I mean, B, C, and D under impoundment, some different scenarios of what it might help to address. Something that's not in our rules and regulations but really is required, and this is going to be a big one as well. We're in an enterprise zone. State Lands Commission is our landlord. We have leases, and folks are able to make a living and make money in an enterprise zone. We get minimum rents and we get some percentage rents. But anybody doing business within our enterprise zone is really subject to a lease or a license agreement. And there's a lot of folks out there that currently aren't. They're kind of under the radar. And I think we need to address it. And those are underwater bottom cleaners, boat hole cleaners, charters. We've got several guys out there that are doing six-pack charters off of our facilities. Boat workers, you know, maintenance guys doing maintenance jobs on boats. We've got no protections from the indemnities. They're, again, by law, we should be licensing them or have them some sort of a sublease or some sort of a legal agreement, and we don't. Pretty much every other harbor does. It's an enterprise zone, so it's something that's been hanging out there a long time, and that would be something that could live in either municipal code or rules and regulations. I think it's something that needs to be addressed. It's a big one. It's like insurance. It's gonna draw a lot of discussion because it's something we've not done over the years.
And so and again, I know we're not getting into the specifics, but what would that look like on the other end? Would that incur licensing with those folks or taking a share, a percent, taking some type of fee, or what would be the consequence of that?
Depending on I think that's yet to be determined, depending on the nature of the business, I think it could be either way. It could be either a flat licensing fee, license agreement fee, like we've got out at the Bader Yard. You know, we've got the Central Coast or the Baders out there, and they're under a license agreement, and it's just a flat per month fee. If they do, $1 million worth of, which they don't, but they do $1 million worth of revenue a year, same fee. If they do $10 worth of revenue a year, same fee. Could be that way, or it could be on a percentage base.
So for somebody, for an example, for somebody that's scraping holes right now, they should have a business license. And if they don't, the council will take care of that. sorry, council. but right now they're not under anything, and they are operating within the enterprise zone, but they're not operating under any type of agreement.
And some of them may have business licenses. I don't know. It's not something, because they're not a lessee or they're not a licensee, we don't track that. Where with the Bader Yard, and I'll use them as an example again, we require them to have insurance.
Could you restate the macro category? I'm a little confused about what you mean by license. Are you talking about a city business license or something different from the enterprise zone?
No. So it's not like we call it a license agreement. We've got it's a legal document. It's like a lease, but it's we've got master leases, which are the big leases for our lease sites, and then those have subleases, which are subject to all the terms of the master lease, but they're kind of a next step down. A license agreement is kind of a next step below that. It's not really something that's, I don't want to say worthy, that's not the right word, but something that warrants a full lease type agreement, but it's a license agreement. It's not a license like some sort of a certificate that you get from a government agency for having some sort of training or qualification.
So would this be in addition to a business license?
Yes. Yes.
I think, do you really only mean, again, we, at least most of us here, sat in on this business license debacle, I'll call it, earlier, and I don't really want to get involved in trying to go after every little bit of income that someone, but I think insurance is important in the sense is that on a liability issue, if someone is doing work in the enterprise zone and they're, God forbid, is an accident or some problem occurs, we could be liable. So I think that at least in that respect, unfortunately, we should look at least in an insurance, if people are doing work in the enterprise zone, they should have some type of liability insurance that, you know, that doesn't kill us.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, looking at the small list that I put together of businesses that would be applicable, yeah, it's not a big cash cow to go after. It's a liability and some best management practices in terms of divers. You know, there's a couple, most harbors now that are requiring their divers to.
You know, there are some that have been out there a long, long time, but a lot of these come and go. To me, it almost seems like it would be creating more work than value. So I think we've got the insurance covered already.
Okay.
But I'm going thumbs down on this one. Gene's got a thumbs down. I've got a thumbs down.
I feel that it's just another layer of bureaucracy on this one.
Yeah, and I agree. Let's kind of go down the line here on this one, because this one is the first one that we've got some dissenting opinion on. Alan and Lynn.
When he said that thing about the best management practices and the divers, that to me it that does make a lot of sense. And we do have, we are in a national estuary here. So I feel maybe we could discuss it some more. I need to know more about it. That obviously there's things I don't understand. So I need to hear the bit about the enterprise zone again too, because I didn't quite follow that, why that mandates.
Okay. Thank you, Alan.
Well, now I'm a little confused, because we were talking about licensing some of these, I would guess, small businesses, perhaps even individuals who are working on their own, hiring out their services, and requiring them to have a business license and to have some kind of an agreement with the harbor department. Am I understanding that right?
Correct. Anybody within the city limits, and depending on what the council ends up doing with this whole business license thing, I'm not going to get into the details of that, but suffice to say that every business in town, whether it's a one-man band underwater diving thing or Fluor Enterprises with 7,000 employees in this town, they're supposed to have a business license.
A business license. But what we're talking about now is something with the Harbor Department.
Correct.
That will be separate and above.
Correct.
The business license.
Correct.
So there's more follow-up, another agreement, and another fee that they pay to the Harbor Department.
Correct. The premise being, and this goes to the enterprise fund, you've got somebody making money on city property, on public property, and the state says that's okay, but there's got to be revenue to the public because it's public property. I'll steal my new city manager's, one of his new terms, is the juice worth the squeeze? Is it worth going there? It's yet to be determined.
Okay, well, under those circumstances, I would say we have to discuss it in order to eliminate it.
Well, but it's not there right, now.
But
so.
To forestall, at least to consider that maybe these, to exempt them in some way, if we feel that it is not worth it.
Well, but that's a slippery slope. So as Eric pointed out, although I'll clarify a little bit, it's not city property, it's Tideland's property.
Tideland's
it's owned
property.
By the state of California,
right.
Which has been entrusted down through the various layers all the way down to the specifically the Harbor Department to manage,
yes.
On behalf of the city, on behalf of the county, on behalf of the state, of the people of the state of California. So right now, you know, it's... we're doing that to the best of our ability as a harbor department. So if we, what I'm saying is, it's a slippery slope if we look at a specific area that, because
but as the
we may have to go down, we may have to, once we open that door, we may have to continue to go down it, is what I'm saying.
But it can be written in that there are exemptions. It's taking the same tack that the city is for their business licenses.
Yeah.
And It seems to me that you give more assurance if you. It seems to me that you give more assurance to protecting people from further encroachment if you do absolutely that and try to protect them from the encroachment of the city of more demands.
Well put. So I think maybe there's enough on both sides of this that this is something that we should probably look at as. Did we get comments down here? So this side, sorry guys. Dana?
Yeah, I think obviously we are already discussing it, that we should discuss it more. Just, you know, we can kind of look at this as, I think what Eric was saying was best management practices when you're talking about people that are diving and maybe charters, those things having to do with safety.
We break out the BMPs, as our bureaucrats call it, the best management practices from this, and Ron put it very nicely, licensing and leasing issue. I would still like to leave the licensing and leasing issue alone because I think it's being adequately addressed. The BMPs, the best management practices, I think everybody here, from what I've seen, has mentioned that that's a valid that's a valid point to look at. So the best management practices, we definitely are a thumbs up on that one. And let's go back then to this licensing and leasing issue.
Looks like your thumb sideways on that one.
I don't want to get involved.
No, I'm not sideways.
So we've got a thumbs down, a thumbs down, a thumbs down. That's three. You did originally. That's four.
I have a question.
Yes, Alan.
You were saying that the state requires us to have this?
I won't say the state says thou shalt have a license agreement for bottom cleaners and state title and trust properties. The state requires us to manage this as an enterprise zone, and anybody operating within that enterprise zone, if they're making money and whatever degree that is, they need to be, and I'll say, and license agreement may not be the best term, but they need to be operating under some sort of management to where the revenue, they're allowed to make revenue, but again, you're on public property. There's got to be a public benefit to it, and most generally, that public benefit is a percentage or a fee for conducting your services on public property.
Yes. Would that include selling fish off of your off the docks? Because that's making money in state lands.
The selling fishermen selling to a existing fish buyer, like Morobe Fish Company or DeGaramore's Fish Company, no, because they are already going through an existing lease site that already captures that transaction.
Okay. What for about a fisherman selling fish off of his boat?
For a fisherman selling, and some do, sell to fish buyers outside of town fish buyers, which is allowed under our rules and regulations, which is one of the things on my list. They can sell to an outside fish buyer not on one of our fish docks that have that as approved use, provided that the fisherman, basically the fish buyer can't come down on the city facility, the docks and or pier. It's got to be up on land. So if the fisherman humps his fish up the dock or down the pier to dry land, basically, and sells to a Joe's Seafood Company out of Bakersfield, that is allowed. I would see that activity as something falling under this licensing agreement because that is a sale that is not being captured by one of our lease sites. The fishermen selling direct to the public, that's another whole other can of worms. That's a great question.
Well, just
Ron has a comment?
Yeah, just to clarify, I'm sure that the board understands that folks that are generating income in the enterprise zone have some obligation to the public that owns that enterprise zone and the people who maintain it and operate it. So I think those of us who said we don't want to get into it, I think I'm safe in speaking for all of us that said that, that it isn't that we don't recognize that there's a legitimate point there. It's just that I don't feel that the Harbor Advisory Board is the correct body to address that point.
That's a definite distinction.
So back to our thumbs up or thumb down, and back to is the juice worth the squeeze? So I'm still did I reverse that? Is that okay?
No, that's right.
Okay. I didn't say it. Our city manager said it first. So I'm still a thumbs down.
Yeah, I feel as though people making money in the enterprise zone are paying their state taxes, so they're paying some money already to the state.
So are you
I'm still thumbs down.
Alan?
Do we need a unanimous?
No, we don't.
I'm ambivalent. I would have to abstain.
All right. Lynn?
I'm still thumbs up.
Okay.
Thumbs down.
And Dana?
So we are going to bring up 1,000 practices somewhere else.
Yes. Are you allowing a certain amount on the piers or not?
That's thumbs up for me.
Can we talk about it?
Yeah. Yep. We're all in agreement on that one for taking a look.
Okay, I brought this up earlier, but I don't think we were really going. We were at the thumbs up, thumbs down part. Get more definitions in our municipal code. Get more robust on our municipal code definitions.
Yeah, everybody's nodding their head. Yep, that's an easy one.
Here's one I know Gene's going to be close to his heart. Careening your boat over on the sand spit or elsewhere to do maintenance on it. And the way I would see this, there could be a distinction between an emergency-type repair or something that you absolutely have to do. Your rudder's fallen out. You can't haul the boat yard, and you got to pop the rudder back in versus going over there and scraping and sanding and painting and doing the whole nine yards.
I would say absolutely. Since you brought it up. I would say absolutely since you brought it up because that happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think people should only be allowed to do that if they have a big scraping party at the same time. No, just kidding.
And it'd be great if we had the boatyard, but
yeah, I don't have any problem with that as long as the boat can be hauled out in Morro Bay. If the boat cannot be hauled out in Morro Bay, then what do you do?
All right, so that,
or you can even go to Port St. Louis and have it hauled out.
So this looks like a thumbs up issue.
Yeah, it's a thumbs up.
Yeah. Yep.
I knew you'd like that one. And then tied into that, and this goes to boatyard as well. You know, clean marina, we are a certified clean marina, and one of the clean marina best management practices is, and again, it comes down to darn it, we don't really have the boatyard for it, any type of a limit. And typically what the clean marina says is if it involves more than 25% of the area of your boat, which is not an exact definition, it should be a boatyard project. Do we want to address that, a limit on the, I guess, size and scope of a repair jobs that can be done on your boat? You know, are we okay with somebody removing the whole wheelhouse and deck and going into a full-on boatyard type repair job, or we just really want to be limited to standard preventative and other small maintenance? It ties into BMPs a lot.
Do we want that to be a subsection of BMPs? Because I was thinking that, and even
it could be a subset. It's part and parcel to it.
Even the boat careening on the sand spit could be under that as well.
Currently, our rules and regs, unless I've completely missed it, are city slips, and we don't have any kind of gate control. We've just got some little signs up. City slips for crew, owners, guests, not the general public. We have seen increased people down on the docks on our fishing boat slips down there fishing, and midnight crabbing and other sorts of things, and because currently there's no real prohibition for it. We've got some signage up, but without a real code to back it up, it's pretty much unenforceable. Two thumbs up over here.
Yep.
Alan, you got any?
So what's the label for this one?
City slip, our 50-odd slips, access for owners, crew, guests only, not general public.
So limited access.
Right. Fishing from other public places. We've had a couple of reports over some months of people fishing from the boardwalk because it's made a nice, easy access point. There's a lot of places that have no overhead casting off of piers to keep people from getting snagged. We don't have any. We do prohibit fishing on our little three-hour docks. And in the oversight little piers above those, there's not supposed to be any recreational fishing going on there. But everywhere else, pretty well wide open. Do we want to look at any sort of no overhead casting or no fishing from any other public areas like the boardwalk?
Maybe some, yeah, we need to discuss this more.
Okay. I'll go on that because that it might just be a matter of enforcement. Because Eric just mentioned that as well, I mean, they're not supposed to be fishing there as well as the three-hour public docks, but I see people fishing on those all the time. So it may just be an enforcement issue.
Okay, and I'm going to try and, for sake of brevity, get to the bottom of some of these. I'll just not worry about. We've currently got an allowance in our rules or regulations for, normally the slips that we operate, the 50 fishing boat slips that are spread around, the head float area in front, some of them we've got rented out on a per month basis, but the vast majority of the rest, like down at Tidelands, especially in the launch ramp area, those docks are for mooring owners, mooring holders, to keep a skiff so that they can get back and forth. A bunch of years ago, we initiated this dollar a day program where we let folks that wanted to keep a little skiff or dinghy in the water and weren't mooring owners or weren't slip holders. And it worked somewhat. It's one of those things, is the juice worth the squeeze, because we have to check on them and write them down and make sure they're there. It's not a big revenue source, but we're getting short on space more and more these days with that kind of space down there. And do we want to look at a discussion on that whole dollar day thing? And we've got, I think, two people doing it. I know, and you may have to recuse yourself, Ron, but Ron's renting more of a slip space than the dollar a day space. No, you're not. You're one of the slip type spaces that are more of a slip space, and it's a dedicated, you're paying for the space, and the dollar a day is just kind of a, as space is available, and space isn't largely available anymore. So do we want to look at rescinding that?
So this, Mr. Chairman? Mm-hmm. So the specific topic, the possible topic is, it is the dollar per day program on head docks.
Yeah. It's in there, yeah. We currently have it in the rules and regulations.
Yeah. Okay. Yep, we got a lot of thumbs up on that one, Eric.
Okay. And the last one, and this one will be... Gene, you like this one too. establishing in our rules and regulations that the Harbor Department, through some process, I'm not just saying by what we say goes, but some sort of a process, a maximum boat size limit on moorings.
And
we've had constantly get requests from folks to upgrade their moorings. They want to put a bigger block in, to put a bigger boat in, and we constantly say no. At some point, I think we need to establish, and it's going to take a long process of going back in history and getting at each mooring owner and getting signing off with each mooring owner. Okay, this is what your mooring is going to be for here on out forevermore. And the harbor department, you know, once we get that process done, you know, the harbor department is the sole determinant for any sorts of mooring upgrades, because our rules and regulations are mute on. They say nothing.
So right now it's at the discretion of the harbor department, correct? Gene?
Yeah, right now it's just, you know, the harbor director has said, hey, this is the size of boats that's been on here for the last 20 years. You can't put a bigger one over. But he needs some legal...
Some backing to that.
Backing on this thing, yeah.
Yeah, I have a mooring agreement, and it said 45 feet, and then I've seen another thing that said 35 feet. Or somebody pointed out, oh, I think that's only for 35 foot, and I think it does need to be somewhat set more firmly as to what they are. And then maximum size, definitely, you can't keep on getting bigger blocks by any means. We don't have the space.
I mean, we've always been okay. If you want to put down a 10,000-pound block because that makes you sleep well at night, by all means do. But it doesn't mean, and some people have assumed that, oh, now I can put a bigger boat on.
Is that something actually for the rules and regs, though? I mean, it would seem to me that that's almost more of an operational thing within the department, that as you approve each mooring, there would be a size limitation on it.
I think there's a place for mention of it and control of it explicitly in the rules and regs, rather than just be up in the air at our discretion.
Yeah. Well, I'd be a thumbs up on that one. I think it's going to be, you know, probably a reference sentence or something in there.
And it doesn't, that wouldn't apply to the yacht club, because the yacht club manages their block of 24.
Your list, Eric, because if it's the end, then we were going to go to any board member's suggestion.
No, for tonight, I think I've got plenty to work with.
Okay. All right. So, well, the first one is MSDs, marine sanitation devices. That's of course, been the big hot potato. So I didn't hear you mention that one. So, enforcement, something to do with enforcement of marine sanitation devices.
And that kind of comes out of our
enforcement, whatever we wouldn't want.
Comes out of our discussion from last meeting, where some homework that I've still got for looking at the legalities of that. So that still ties together.
So that would be a biggie.
So, Mr. Chairman, MSDs or discharge?
Both.
As a more generic topic. The macro.
Yeah, so
the
macro
topic
would be discharge, and then underneath that, thanks, Ron. Underneath that, would be MSDs. Sounds good. We have thumbs up on that?
Yeah.
I think so. Okay. Other items? Yes, Gene.
In the mooring category, there is some discussion about double moorings and putting in floats and putting in two moorings with Jim's Anthwessel and Associated. Can that be cleaned up? Looks like it's old kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about that today, I think, there's one school of thought that says, why is that even in there? That should be part of their mooring agreement and not something in the rules and regulations. I don't know why we put it in there in the years past, and we could certainly take the names out and just mention the mooring numbers. Yes.
Just as a general thing, the one thing that I noticed that is remiss in this whole rules and regulation is any type of appeal process. In other words, if a mooring owner, a boat owner, actually has a problem with an enforcement issue, there's nothing in the rules and regulations to say that he can appeal to either our body or somebody, and to at least have some reciprocation if it's not a just cause. There is no appeal whatsoever. I just happened to see the one from Santa Barbara, and there's a tremendous appeal process in every rule and regulation. And I think that there should be some type of appeal process for the people if they feel they're not, you know, it's not a justified cause.
So if someone's issued a citation, there is an appeal process to that, but you're talking about...
Yeah, just, you know, I mean...
Any of the other kind of
stuff. Let's say one of the things that was brought up is on moorings, on private moorings, is first off, someone pays, you know, $35,000 for a mooring, and they have a month-to-month lease. You know, I was talking to Dana here. Let's say the state came in here, because we're a preserve, and says, we want 20 of your moorings. What's the due course of that person who owns that mooring, who's been paying property taxes on it, and how does he get his money back, or how does he appeal this decision? There's nothing in there to do that.
So is that action within the rules and regs, though, would be my question.
I mean, at least there should be some appeal in the rules and regs. If you got a rules and regs, you should be able to appeal it. There should be some type of rule to appeal. There's nothing in here. I don't know.
I'd have to look at the overall city rules and regulations, muni code stuff. There may be addressed somewhere else, but it's a good point.
Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I think it's, I think it's worthy of taking a look. It's interesting. I'd give it a thumbs up just for the sake of taking a look at it. What does the rest of the board feel? Thumbs up? Yeah, good. Thank you, Bill. Anything else to add to this list? Items of omission.
Let's go home. Gene, do you have a motion?
No, okay. All right, so calm down, folks. We're almost there. So no other items? Okay. Very good. That gives us a good start. Okay, that concludes item. Wait, before I conclude, Ron?
Mr. Chair,
yes?
When will the Harbor Department have an opportunity to send the hit list out to us?
February
2016?
I'll take a shot at it tomorrow. I want to get it off my list and get it to you. I mean, it's just a list. It's not that difficult.
Oh, okay, good.
And then I'll send the Word. So everyone's hopefully familiar with the Word program, Microsoft Word, and knows how to turn on track changes. And
is that on the interweb?
I see six. I see six yeses and one.
So Polly is pulling out her list of items. We can review those quickly. Eric will, and then if we have anything that we want to add to that from the board members.
So what I see, hopefully in December, will be some rules and regulations, maybe a dabbling in that. Hopefully the Marine Services Facility Ad Hoc Committee report and that draft final report from LWC, if that goes as planned, so that will be a fairly meaty item. Tsunami, I mean, that can slide to any time. Can bring it back next time, depending on what next month looks like. State Park Marina Operating Agreement, as I think I mentioned last time, Parks would like to do sort of a public hearing based on their consultant report that spelled out kind of three financial ways for the parks and the city to move forward and trying to rebuild and dredge and redo that marina. They want to hold that as a public hearing. We kind of got that penciled in for February. Marine sanitation devices we've got on our new list and the old list. Sublease fee schedule for commercial slips, that was a suggestion from some of our fishermen a couple meetings ago that fishermen should get the commercial fishing rate when they sublease rather than the regular transient sublease rate. And that I see a springtime, almost summer, because it's a master fee schedule change, and that would tie right in the master fee schedule. Morbid fish quota share and trawl permits. There's nothing really new to bring on the whole quota share process. At some point when the agenda's looking thin, we'll bring that back up. We've got something significant to bring up. water lease site improvements, including dock configurations. I think that fell in as along with the inspection. Ron, the one item you had for capital improvement and inspection schedules and whatnot. Coast Guard building. Nothing new to report. When I do have something new to report, I'll throw it on the agenda. Most likely, unless it's a decision-making type thing, it'll probably just be a status report item. And planning for the power plant property. We're dreaming big there now. I think that's, although that's getting closer. You know, the plant's closed. We're getting close to owning the triangle lot, and that eventually there's going to be some planning going on with that. In the not too distant future, I think my understanding is by the end of the year we should own that lot, and I think at that point the city's going to be looking at what we're going to do with it. So that may be a time where that could start getting looked at. And if that's not enough, I'm sure we've got some more great ideas out there.
I don't see anything on this side of the table. Anything on this side? Gene?
Maybe a quick lease site status reports up and down the bay of what's going on at some point.
I thought we had that. So just, I mean, I try to bring those to some degree in the status report agenda item, like the council action when those sort of things happen. Maybe, and I'll just use a Rose's Landing has got an application in for building slips, and it's going through planning, and if it came to be the permit is issued, I'm just making this up as a question, if it came to be the permit for construction was built and they look like they're starting to move forward, something like that sort of thing?
One end to the other really quickly, what's going on?
Okay.
We do that at least once a year, and I'm, you know, maybe I'll talk with Eric offline, and maybe we'll try and set a regular month, maybe June of every year, because it's worthy, and we do it about annually, and right about when we think about it, and that might be nice to set on a set schedule. So I'll talk with Eric about that. Anything else? Excellent. Well, that concludes item E, Declaration of Future Agenda Items. Thanks, everyone, for hanging in there tonight. We shot for 8 o'clock. It's almost 9, but we did a good job. We got a lot accomplished. So that moves us to item F, Adjournment. Do I see a motion to adjourn? Moved by Gene, seconded by Dana. All in favor, please say aye. Thank you.